Any questions about anything from last time? I wanted to do a couple more separation of variables problems to show you where some of this, where some of these classic orthogonal series come from. We've been getting Fourier series every time, but it's possible to get other kinds of series that are pretty interesting. So today I want to work out another hot wire problem, where instead of having a refrigerator slapped on the ends to chill it down to zero, I'm going to insulate the ends, and it'll give me different boundary conditions that lead to a whole different kind of problem. Was there any questions about last time? Yeah.
I have a question about Fourier theorem. So when you prove the summation, you use the geometric series, right?
Right.
Which that sum is valid for if e to the ix doesn't equal 1.
Right.
So then you have to show that when x is 0, essentially, that it also holds as a separate condition?
Let's see. What theorem did you call it?
Wasn't it Fourier's
theorem? Fourier's?
Where it's like sine of n plus half x over sine.
The Dirichlet kernel.
Or, yeah, but then the Fourier's. Sums of those. Yeah, this Chisaro sum.
Those are finite sums. So you're worrying about convergence in the limit.
Well, even when you use the geometric series, even if it's not in the infinite case, don't you have to assume that the R term
is not 1, right? Because you get 1 over 1 minus 1 on the bottom.
Right. So right. You have to prove two different cases, like when x is 0, meaning the R is 1, and then in the other case also.
E to the ix. Yeah, I guess maybe you're right. You shouldn't let the x equal 0. But that's when it's a singular anyway. That's when you got to use L'Hopital's rule. So they would line up there by continuity anyway. They're finite sums of nice things. You're right. And that formula wouldn't be valid if the x was 0.
Right.
Right. But that's exactly where we're not looking at it, because then we've got 0 over 0 anyway in the Dirichlet thing.
Right.
So it would extend to be correct by continuity at 0. So you're right. So if you're going to write down, you should say assume x isn't 0. And you get this valid formula for the Dirichlet kernel, or the Fourier kernel, and it's not defined at 0 because it's 0 over 0. But in the limit, it would make sense there, and it would agree with the, like, just because it has to. That finite sum is nice and continuous. And so it's going to converge to something, it's going to add up to something continuous. And you have a nice formula for away from 0, and that thing is continuous at 0 by L'Hopital's rule, and so nothing bad happens there.
Okay.
But you're right, if you're going to divide, if you're going to use the formula for the sum of a geometric series, partial sum up to order n, you can't do it. That formula bombs when it's 1, because you get 1 over 1 minus 1, and that doesn't make any sense. Any other questions? Okay, so I want to do a hot wire problem today. Another one. I'll have my wire stretched from 0 to L like I did last time. So remember, I got a solution that looked like, last time. I had refrigerated ends. Which means I held them at 0 degrees. I had U of 0 for all time was held at 0 degrees, and U at the other end for all time was held at 0 degrees. And I got a solution that looked like this. I got U of xt was a sum, as n goes from 1 to infinity, Fourier coefficients, but then I had e to the minus c n pi over L squared t sine n pi x over L. And these things go to zero incredibly fast. So think about it. At time equals zero, this is just a Fourier sine series. But when time kicks in, these things are gonna die away incredibly fast. So, these terms die away fast. Really fast. And if you think about it, e to the minus cn pi over l squared t is equal to e to the minus cn, not, I'm going to take out the n, n pi over l squared t to the n squared. And when t kicks in, this would be e to the minus something. So this is less than 1. So I've got something less than 1 to a gigantic power, and that gets bigger. It gets bigger fast. It's not just like n squared cubed fourth. It's n squared. So it'd be like 9, 16, 25. Those are gigantic numbers. And this thing is strictly less than 1 if when t kicks in. So at time equals 0, they're all equal to 1. But as soon as t kicks in, this is less than 1, and we're taking it to a gigantic power. And if t goes anywhere, this thing gets much less than 1 to a gigantic power. So we see that when you slap refrigerators on, the temperature just gets sucked out, and the final solution is a big fat 0. So the steady state solution, u of xt goes to 0 as time goes on. In fact, rather fast. And you can just see it from the way the solution is expressed. And if you have a nice function, you know the Fourier sine coefficients would be nice. Like if it was C2 smooth, the Fourier sine coefficients would be like 1 over n squared. So you get very rapid convergence to 0. But today's problem I want to do is the problem with insulated ends. A new kind of boundary conditions called insulated ends. So remember, Kelvin's law said that the temperature gradient is proportional to how fast heat is flowing, which means that if you were to insulate the ends, heat wouldn't flow past them. And by Kelvin's law, that means the temperature gradient would be 0. So Kelvin's law: heat flow, the rate of heat flow, is proportional to the temperature gradient in the x variable. Okay, so if the ends are insulated, there is no heat flowing out that way, which means that the gradient would have to be 0 at an insulated end. So we conclude the temperature gradient equals 0 at an insulated end. So here's the new heat problem I want to solve. The hot wire stretched from 0 to L. U is the temperature, and so U satisfies the heat equation. du dt equals c squared d2u dx squared. And the insulated end condition is that du dx at zero for all time is zero. And the other end, du dx at the L point, the temperature gradient is zero for all time. So these are the insulated ends conditions. So no heat is flowing because the temperature gradient is zero. And then you'll find that there's lots of solutions, but to figure out what this thing really does, you have to know the temperature at time zero. So that these are the boundary conditions. The initial condition would be, excuse me, U of x at time zero is a known temperature distribution. That's the problem. I've done that separation of variables routine any number of times, so I won't do it again this time. But let me tell you what happens when you start doing the boundary conditions. So what do the boundary conditions become? You get a Sturm-Liouville problem. So we get, as usual, we use separation of variables. It's a technique now that we've done it three times. Separation of variables, we assume that u of xt is function of x times function of time. And that gives us the problems we've come up with in the past, namely x double prime minus lambda x equals zero, and t prime minus lambda t equals zero. But let's think about what those boundary conditions translate to mean. So what are the I'll leave some space up here to put it in. What do the boundary conditions become? Let's see, I've got u of xt is that x of t, so when I take d by dx of it, that would be, the x derivative would pile on the x function, and the t function would just sit there. And so if I want the left end point to have zero temperature gradient, that would be x prime of zero times t of t. And we want that to equal zero for all time. And remember, we don't want the zero solution. So we certainly don't want t of t to be identically zero. That would give us the zero solution. That means that this constant number, x prime of t, better be zero. And when you put in the other one, similarly, we need x prime of L to be equal to zero. So here's a new Sturm-Liouville problem. Let me go back up and put, I need x prime of zero to be zero, and x prime at L to be equal to zero. This is a Sturm-Liouville problem we haven't run across yet. And it's one of the classic ones. And what's fascinating about these Sturm-Liouville problems, they always give you lambdas, which are called eigenvalues, and they're always these sequences, like n squared. In this case, it would be minus n squared, or something like that. They go to infinity real fast. And the solutions you get always turn out to be orthogonal. That's kind of cool. And that's what makes Sturm-Liouville problems so useful. You get these orthogonal functions, and you can treat them just like Fourier series. These are called generalized Fourier series. They're orthogonal sums. They're going to converge just like regular old Fourier series. And you can have a different theory for every single one of them. They all come out working exactly the same in a beautiful way. There's a Bessel's inequality, and the whole theory goes through. So once you understand Fourier series, you understand all these Sturm-Liouville problems, basically. You can attack them with the same techniques and make a Dirichlet kernel and the whole shebang. But I thought it'd be fun to go through these cases. Let's see what we get. Let's do the case lambda equals zero. That would give me the differential equation x double prime equals zero. And that gives me solutions of the form x of x equals ax plus b. And now I've got to think about those boundary conditions. Let me calculate. X prime of x is just a. And if I need that to be 0 at 0 and L, of course, the only way to make that happen is to make A to be 0. So we see we need A equals 0 to get X prime of 0 equals 0, and the other end equal to 0, X prime of L equal to 0. But we don't get the zero solution in this case. That makes this part go away, and we're left with just plain old B. So this didn't happen before. Now we're getting an actual solution. So we say, aha, we get a non-zero solution. X of x equals B. For the lambda equals zero case. I'm going to take B to be 1 because later on, when I'm dealing with series, I can absorb this B into some other constants. So right now I'm just looking for non-zero solutions, and I'm going to add them up with constants in front of them. Let's just take B to be 1. And then the T problem, for that one, when lambda is equal to 0, it's just T prime equals 0. And so T is a constant too. Get T of T equals a constant 2. So my first solution I found is, I'll call it u sub 0 of xt is just 1. Okay, now let's think about the case, the next case, which is lambda positive. Let's write lambda equal k squared. Then my differential equation is x double prime minus k squared x equals 0. And let's see, the characteristic polynomial would be r squared minus k squared equals 0. I get r equals plus or minus k. And so the general solution in that case would be x of x equals a e to the minus kx plus b e to the plus kx. Or you can always write that as a hyperbolic cosine kx plus b hyperbolic sine kx. When you study differential equations, these form a basis for the solution set, and these form a different basis for the solution set. It's not hard to show that. And this is more convenient from the point of view of engineers, because it's like sine and cosine and initial conditions. they're zeros and ones at the origin. So it makes it really easy to solve initial value problems, because one has a zero and the other one has derivative one, and vice versa. Okay, so now I'm going to mess around with boundary conditions. I better calculate x prime of x would be, let's see, the derivative of hyperbolic cosine is hyperbolic sine. And the derivative of hyperbolic sine is hyperbolic cosine. And if I was an engineer, I would say sinh ks, kx, and cosh kx. And now let's plug in the 0 1 and see what we get. X prime at 0, the hyperbolic sine of 0 would be 0. So I'd get 0 plus bk times the hyperbolic cosine of 0, which is 1. And so I want that to equal 0. Which means the b goes away. I need b equal to 0. Which means this part of the solution isn't there. And now I need to make the other piece 0 at L. So let's see how I can do that. I get x prime at L. That would be ak hyperbolic sine of k times L. And the graph of hyperbolic sine, it has only one 0, namely at the origin. And it's never zero again. In fact, it grows like crazy. It grows like the exponential function. Let's see, I dropped my sinh. This is sinhkl. That is not, let's see, this, what's not zero? This is not zero. So the bummer is, we need a to be equal to 0, too, and that means we only get the 0 solution. So this one's a blowout. And so now the last case is where we're going to get a whole bunch. Case lambda negative. Let's write lambda equal minus k squared. Then the characteristic polynomial is r squared plus k squared equals 0. And that's the case of complex roots. We get r equals plus or minus ki. And second order constant coefficient linear ODEs, the theory tells us the solution is x of x equals a cosine kx plus b sine kx. And now I have to plug in the boundary conditions, so I better calculate x prime of x before I do that. X prime would be derivative of cosine is minus sine. And derivative of sine is plus cosine. And so let's see if I plug in x prime at 0. Sine of 0 is 0, so this would be a 0 plus bk times 1. And I need that to be equal to 0. Which means, once again, b has to be 0. Which means, let's see, this piece goes away and this piece goes away. And now the other thing I need is x prime at L to be 0. And x prime of L is, let's see, what is it? It's minus a k sine k times L. And I don't want to get the 0 solution again, so I don't want to have to take a to be 0. So let's see, I want this to be 0. And I don't want A to be 0, because otherwise I'd get the 0 solution. I'm looking for non-zero solutions. That means I better choose K to make sine KL to be equal to 0. So the aha is we need sine KL to be 0. And sine is 0 is exactly at n pi. So once again, we see these familiar numbers kick in. We need KL to be equal to n pi, and n can be 1. K is positive, so n could be 1, 2, 3, etc. And so the k's have to be n pi over L. And that means the lambda is minus that squared. But look what my function turns out to be. Let's see, there's my x of x back there. That one went away, and I'm left with cosine kx. So my nth function is cosine, not a sine. So instead of getting a sine series, I'm going to get a cosine series. And so let's see, my xn of x, I'll take my a to be 1, is going to be cosine n pi x over L. And if you go back and look at what my t is going to be, my t equation was t prime minus, let's see, what do you got, minus minus n pi over L squared t equals 0. Oh, I dropped my C. That's annoying. I should have taken C to be 1. Otherwise, I get a C right here. Anyway, what I'm more interested in is the fact that I'm getting a cosine series. I get my Tn of t is e to the minus. So if I'd gotten my C where it should have been, I would have had a C right here. C n pi over L squared t. And I'm not putting any constants, because when I add these up, that's when I'm going to put in the constants. And so my solution is going to be, when I add them all up, it's going to be u of xt is going to be a constant, let's call it a naught, why not, plus a sum as n goes from 1 to infinity of an e to the minus cn pi over L squared t cosine n pi x over L. That is a Fourier cosine series. And so when I stick in time equals 0, this is the Fourier cosine series for the function f.
Wait, so where did you get the C from again?
It's the C I dropped. So let's see. So let me see. I'll go back and fix it. Where did I drop it? No, the B is okay. The C was a constant in the heat equation.
Okay, got it.
I'm sorry, is that?
Yeah.
There's the stupid C, which means that, yeah, so when I pulled them apart, so my C would, when I dropped it here, C squared would go right there. And it didn't matter in the case equals zero, that zero would make the C go away. So it didn't matter there. It didn't matter until I got down to here. Right, and so I should have had a C squared right in here. And now it's fixed. That's Fourier cosine series. And so remember how you can see that Fourier cosine series are just Fourier series. So when I want to solve my initial condition here, that's the last thing to deal with. U of x at time 0 is just a Fourier cosine series. And so these coefficients need to be the Fourier cosine coefficients for the function. And we want that to be equal to f. And so the theory of Fourier series tells us that these are the Fourier cosine coefficients, namely a naught is the average of f. That would be, All right, so how do Fourier cosine series work? I've got this function. Let's say here's my f. Let's pretend it's the pluck shape. Cosine functions are even. So if I want this to be a Fourier full series for something, I can arrange to get this thing converging to a full Fourier series if I take the even extension of f. So I would take this, to extend it in an even way, I would just copy a reflection over here to minus L. So this is the even extension. And then I would take the periodic extension of that. And that's what the full Fourier series I could get converging. And so the full Fourier series for this, the full Fourier series for the even extension of f has no sine terms. Remember, because if I was writing out the integrals for the sine terms, they would be all zero, because I'd have even function times sine in x, which is odd, even times odd is odd, and so all those integrals would be zero. So all the bn terms would be zero. And remember what the an terms would be. The an terms, well, let's see, what's a naught? A naught would be 1 over 2L integral from minus L to L of F. That's the extended F. And because this is an even function, that would be, when I multiply that by 2, the integral would be 1 over L times the integral from 0 to L of F dx. That's the average of my given temperature function from 0 to L. Equals the average temp on 0 to L. Average initial temp. That's going to be an important number. I'll explain why in a second. And the ANs would be 1 over 2L. No, what is it? It's 1 over L, rather. Integral from minus L to L, f of x, cosine n pi x over L. Those are the Fourier coefficients. And because this is even times an even, that product is even. And so by symmetry, let's see, even times an even is an even. And that means this is going to be equal to 2 over L integral, and we take the right half from 0 to L, f of x cosine n pi x over L. So that's what the Fourier coefficient should be. And that shows me that this cosine series actually converges to f. Notice it doesn't have any jumps. When I take the periodic extension, there's no jumps at all, and so this thing actually converges to f. If this was my f, it is it satisfies the Lipschitz condition. And so it converges at all at every point. So it actually does converge to f. But here's something interesting to note. Go back and look at my solution. Here it is. Once again, I have those e to the minus something t's. These die away really fast. So these die away very fast. And so that part of the solution fizzles out. And in the steady state solution, all that's going to be left is that constant term, which is the average temperature. That's kind of what you expect how temperature to behave. If one side of this room was hot and the other side was cold, then eventually all the temperature would average out and we'd be at the average temperature of the room in the steady state. So things to observe. So this Fourier cosine series really does converge to f. On 0 to L. And we can read off that the limit as time goes on of u of xt, all those exponentials die away and kill that part of the solution, and so all that's left is the constant term a naught, and that's the average temperature that we started with. So that's the average initial temperature. On the wire at time 0. And that would be called the steady state solution. If you let time go to infinity, then you get this solution that doesn't depend on time. In this case, the steady state solution is a constant. And so this is a standard thing about Sturm-Liouville. All those cosine functions are orthogonal. And you have the same theory. Another really interesting problem, which I'm not going to do, but I want you to be aware of, so here's another famous solution. It's called radiative boundary conditions. How do you spell radiative? Radiative boundary conditions. So if you've got a red hot wire and you let the ends hang out, they're going to radiate heat. And the rate of heat flow would be proportional to the gradient. So the idea is if it's hotter than hell, it radiates fast. And if it's not very hot, it radiates. It's like the Earth being hot radiates heat by, what is that called? Black body radiation. And the hotter the Earth is, the more heat it radiates. So if you think about it, you can convince yourself that the radiative heat is proportional to the temperature. So the rate of the heat flow, the hotter it is, the more it flows, is proportional to the temp. So let's see, if the rate of heat flow is proportional to the temp, and it's proportional to the temperature gradient. So this thing right here, the rate of heat flow, is also proportional to the temperature gradient. Which means I've got the temperature gradient is proportional to the temperature. So let's think about it. The left end point let's see. So the rate of heat flow would be du dx at time equals zero is proportional to the temperature at zero for all time. So that's the temperature gradient is proportional to, and let's think about it. If this is hotter, let's see, what does it mean? What if it's hot? Let's say it's hot. Then heat is flowing away, right? If it's hotter than hell, then the heat is flowing out, is radiating out, which means this would be negative. So I claim that if you think about it, there's got to be a minus sign there. For it to make sense. So if it's hotter than hell, the temperature is leaking out this way, and that temperature gradient would be negative. All right. And at the other end point, so think of hot. Temperatures, the heat is gushing out. So that's got to be negative. And if you think at the other point, let's see. I claim it's going to be the sign's going to be different. What if this other side was hot? Du dx at L T equals, it's proportional to the temp. Well, if it's hot, that means heat is gushing out. And so the temperature gradient is going to be what? Oh, is it going to be? It's going to be negative again, isn't it? So they're both negative. And so if this was a heat class, or if you were all engineers, there's fun things to do now, and that is to, okay, have one insulated end and one radiated end, and you get a new kind of problem. And so all the Sturm-Liouville problems you get with these kind of boundary conditions. So also, we can mix boundary conditions of all these types. Okay, what we had type homogeneous, that was the refrigerated end. And then we had insulated, and the third type of today is radiative. So one end could be radiative, the other end could be homogeneous. And if you're taking a heat class, you'd go through all these. But what's fascinating is every time you do a new one of those problems, you get a whole bunch of new Sturm-Liouville problems. And mind-blowing, the theory of Sturm-Liouville is that any one of these things would give you orthogonal solutions, and you can make generalized Fourier series out of them. So the Sturm-Liouville problem would be x double prime minus x equals zero, and then these radiative, let's see, the homogeneous ones would give you things like x of 0 equals 0. And insulated, we saw, would give us that x prime of 0 equals 0. So if 0 is insulated, and then if 0 is radiative, you would get x prime of 0 plus k times x of 0 equals 0. And similar on the other end. And fascinating, the theory of Sturm-Liouville says you get orthogonal solutions that way. So Sturm-Liouville theory. Which is a lot of fun, by the way. We get orthogonal series of solutions that work just like Fourier series. So we get orthogonal series of non-zero solutions. And so after Fourier series were studied, it was very natural to study these things called generalized Fourier series. Okay, that feels like enough applications for the time being. I think next lecture I'll go back and start thinking about what we know about convergence of Fourier series more carefully again. So I've been talking about Chapter 3, and I put on the homepage that you should start reading Chapter 3. I guess I didn't say it in class, but start reading Chapter 3. I don't think I'm going to do all of it, and you might notice that I skipped some things in Chapter 2. So, but you can start reading Chapter 3. And I'll talk about that next time. Did I give everybody's homework paper? I want to have the midterm the Monday before spring break.
Monday.
Is that bad? The Monday, the week before spring break starts.
So when is that?
What date? What day? I have to look it up.
The 6th of March.
The 6th of March?
6th. Oh.
Yeah.
Is it in class? Or
in class, yeah.
Actually, it's the same. Oh, nice. So,
I just don't.